This call is now being recorded. Please go ahead. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you, Anna. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the meeting of the Translation and Transliteration of Contact Information PDP Working Group on Thursday, the 27th of February, 2014. On the call today, we have Peter Green, Rudy Vancic, Akup Dawanowit, Chris Dillon, May Sirwati, Peter Rentforth, Petanand Korvapatana, Jim Galvin. We have apologies from Justin Chu, Jennifer Chung, Amir Elzar, Wolf Ulrich Nobin, Ephraim Kenyatto, and Ching Chow. From staff, we have Lars Hoffman, Julie Hedlund, Natalie Peregrin, and myself, Terry Agnew. I'd like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you.
Thank you very much. This is Chris Dillon speaking. Let's just move to item three on the agenda, which is whether there have been any changes to the statements of interest since the last call. Just put your hand up in Adobe chat if that's happened. Okay, so seeing no hands up, we can move into agenda item four, which is responses, if any, from SOs and ACs. And we've had one response. It's a Thai response, very, very interesting. So we'll cover that in a minute. But during today's earlier call with the GNSO Council, it was suggested that we actually increase the deadline. So the deadline for responses to the letters that we sent out is actually tomorrow, which is obviously very soon, and we've not had many responses. So there is a suggestion that we make the deadline sometime in the future. Now the question would be exactly when that might be appropriate. I think the suggestion may have been to just to make it another week, which would put it at now about sort of 7th of March or something like that. Larsa, would you like to add something about that?
Thank you. Sorry. Thank you, Chris. This is Lars for the record. I apologize. I think that a week is probably fine. Maybe 2 weeks might work too. I was just wondering on the format whether it would be okay for, it might be useful for the chairs, other working groups have done this, for the chairs to send out reminders to the leaders of different SOs, ACs and stakeholder groups and contingencies too, so it comes from you this time around as a reminder rather than from the secretariat who sent it out the first time. And there's precedence for this, and I think it might add to the urgency.
I'm very happy to do that. If you have an email list that you used last time, could you send it? Some sort of list with the names and the emails, and then I'll do that.
Yes, no problem. I will get in touch with Glenn, and I'll if it's okay with Julie too, I will forward it all to you.
That would be very helpful. I mean, that leaves us with the decision about whether it should be 1 week or two. But before we get into that, I'll just ask, I think Rudy would like to say something.
Thank you, Chris. Rudy speaking for the Vancouver. I've had a chat with Olivier overnight discussing about the sponsor from the at-large, and it seems that they need some more time to handle these questions too. There is a lot on the tables at the different SOs and ACs. There are so many working groups at the same time going on, and a lot of input is required from all of them. And I think that's the reason why we didn't get that much response. They will look into it, and they promised me that we can have a face-to-face discussion in Singapore to eventually highlight a few of the questions we have.
Thank you very much. That sounds as if it's a vote for the deadline to be at least 2 weeks. So that would be the 14th of March, but that really is just before Singapore. I'm really wondering what the best thing to do with this is, because obviously, you know, we don't want to add unnecessary delay, but on the other hand, we haven't had very much input. Julie, would you like to say something about this?
Thank you, Chris. This is Julie Headland. I would suggest that since the working group is having a public meeting on the Monday in Singapore, that the deadline should be extended through Singapore, because we would have the opportunity at that public meeting to remind, to go over the questions, to ask again for input. We may, because we'll be in the Asian region, we might be able to generate some interest from members of the community in Asia. And I think that probably the most important goal for this group is to get as much information as possible. While we do have deadlines, I think it's fairly clear in the charter that that the working group is supposed to consult as much as possible, and I think the consultation on these questions is very key. So I would ask the working group to consider extending the deadline through Singapore. And if there is an opportunity for a face-to-face meeting with the ALAC in Singapore, of course, we could gather input from them as well. Although I would suggest, Rudy, that if that meeting is to take place, it needs to be scheduled ASAP, because I do know that for many groups, their schedules in Singapore are booked or nearly booked, and I imagine that's probably the case with the ALAC as well. So, and I put that out there then for the working group's consideration. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that, Julie. Very helpful. I wonder what other people feel about that. I mean, effectively, that is more or less saying that the deadline should be moved till the end of March. That's how I understand that. What do people think about that suggestion? I can see that Rudy's agreeing. Yes. Okay. Now, Petter, would you like to say something about that?
Yeah. Just shortly. Could I break my? Okay. As well, I think it's a good idea if it's practically possible. I just wanted to add. So, do we have the possibility to also have a meeting with a group of interest? As I understand it.
I think, effectively, we are to have a meeting, I think, either early on Monday or Tuesday morning, which we can use for that. So that is my understanding. We don't know whether it's Monday or Tuesday, but I think that's what that is about.
Yeah, because as I said, the general schedule is quite full already, so if there are any opportunities for us to meet formal or more informal, but to get face-to-face inputs from other groups, it would be excellent. So I say that we take all those opportunities that came up to us.
Yes, absolutely. I agree completely. Now, in the chat, Julie's typing that there is a tentative time for that meeting, which is 7:30 till 8:30 on the Monday. So, you know, we really do need to make the most of that meeting and advertise it, publicise it. But also, I think it's very important that all of us, you know, use networking opportunities to mention, you know, what we're doing, and we do need feedback and other help. What the facility we know we won't have is a home room, so that, you know, there is no way that we are going to have a room where we could actually invite people back. That will not work. So it's either going to be a matter of using that meeting on Monday or going to other meetings. or what we can do personally, just lobbying people. That seems to be the situation we are in. Julie is pointing out that there was a request for a meeting with the GAC, which was turned down, which we should just add, just to make things complete. Their schedule is just way too full. Okay, if we tentatively agree that the deadline's moved to the end of March, we can now perhaps have a look at the Thai correspondence that came in, unless there's anything anybody wants to pick up before we head into that. There's also various typing going on in the room here. Ah, yes. And so I think we may have the... Is that the Thai? Yes, it is the Thai letter there in the chat room. That's really useful. Okay. So...
Chris, if I may?
Ah, yes, yes. Rudy?
Yes, Chris, Rudy speaking here. I just got a reaction back from Olivier with regard to a meeting with Alak, and it looks like they have still a couple of slots available. So he's going to check with Heidi also, and we will try to find the space in their agenda to fit into it. At the other side... I will try at the UNPOC side to see if we can have an hour space in our schedule to allow people to come and have a face-to-face chat with us too at that moment. With regard to the question of Petter, I would say let's try to individually approach GAC members in order to get returns back from GAC. I know that will require a lot of work and energy, but I think we need input from them too.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you very much for that input.
Chris and Rudy, maybe I could. This is Julie Headland. Perhaps I could just add. I'll go ahead and get in touch with Heidi and for the ALAC meeting, because I will actually have to try to see if we can avoid conflicts. And I have a draft schedule, so I know when various meetings are scheduled. And, of course, Heidi knows the ALAC schedule, so I'll work with her to see if we can find a time that does not conflict with something that we know that community members will need to attend.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. All right. In that case, let us move into the next point on the agenda, which is looking at the response that we've had, and it is this Thai response you can see on the screen, and making some very interesting points about English as a first language or an official second language. So, English is no such thing in Thailand, but, for practical reasons, English is, in fact, yes, reading it through, there is a clause that says that English is the de facto second language of Thailand. And then further down, I think there's a recognition, it says, it is quite clear, this is on page 2 near the top, it is quite clear that it is desirable to translate contact information to a single common language or transliterate it to a single common script. And effectively that means English. So nothing too, interesting, but nothing too controversial coming out of that. Moving further down, there is mention that English contact information may be inconsistent. Well, this is a very, very common issue. And in fact, there was another Thai document that was sent to the list, which has absolutely beautiful examples of actually, I think they're Bangkok place names, and it's just an absolute education to see what the issues are. I mean, there's just nothing like looking at that data, and if we're lucky today, we may have time to have a look at that other correspondence, because it does raise a lot of things that we've already talked about, but one or two new things as well. Moving down, what have we got? Now there is talk about Romanization, so we're heading towards the bottom of page 2, which in the Thai case is by the Royal Institute. And then there is talk of exceptional reserved words, and that there is a geographical name committee. So this means that, you know, the Geographical Name Committee may be establishing formal versions of Thai place names. Now, the reference to the list of reserved words, I'm not sure about that. That might be something we need to follow up. Fascinatingly, at the end of that paragraph, there is however, the standards are not widely known. Oh, dear. I mean, this is exactly the sorts of issues we were seeing when we were looking at addresses before now. Standards are not widely known, and it is not mandatory to adopt them. So that means that even government entities could be using different methods for translation or transliteration. These are issues we have seen with the addresses we've looked at. I'm just trying to think which languages they are. Certainly Chinese, Japanese. It's a really big thing. Okay, some talk about validation. I added a definition of validation to our list of validation of definitions, which is under point 1 in our questions. It's also taken up in validation is actually also taken up in the registrar accreditation agreement. Again, it would be very, very good to have a look at how validation is used. It's in a section called Who is Accuracy Program Specification, and admittedly it's only for registrars, but that's very interesting, and we may just have time to have a look at that, I hope. Okay, now any other interesting things? I think the answers to some of these other questions are more or less what we've seen before. So, you know, contact information needs validation. And then, should translation and or transliteration be mandatory? And, you know, basically it should be mandatory. And there's also some statistics about how GTLDs break down in Thailand. So how many are GTLDs and how many are CCTLDs? And then now we're well on to page 3. So we're looking at should translation and or transliteration of contact information be mandatory for all registrants and that. Yes, again, we're getting the answer mandatory for those. Based in non-ASCII script countries. So that's the sort of answer I suppose we would expect. Moving further down, brilliant. They're actually talking, I'd forgotten. They're actually talking about the Registrar Accreditation Agreement. Wonderful, we can cover it. And so validate that all postal address fields are consistent across fields. So, for example, that the street exists in the city and this sort of thing. It brings up some very interesting issues about just how addresses are represented in databases. And if we get as far as looking at the other Thai document, there is an interesting situation where somebody actually missed out part of the address, and I think it was the district name in the Thai address. And you know, the question there was if that might have been because whoever was filling in the form didn't realise that the district information needed to go in a particular field. So that's actually starting to raise some issues that we haven't thought about very much. Okay. Technically commercially feasible. And then there is, there is the pointing out that validation of postal addresses could be very costly, and there could be difficulty with actually getting various territories to comply with it. Perhaps I should just pause momentarily. I wonder, would anybody else like to pick up any points in here? I'm sort of plowing through all the points that I noticed, but it's quite likely other people have spotted other things. So I'll just stop for a moment and just see if anybody would like to pick up any points. Problems. Yes, Pityanan, would you like to say something?
Yes, this is Pityanan here. Thank you very much, Chris. It's a very good briefing of the documentation. I just want to update a little bit about the attempt, the gag, during the Singapore meeting.
Mm-hmm.
We actually try to approach the gag individually, and during the apricot presentations, we met Singapore and Malaysian GAC, and we talked to them a little. So it's likely that we will have the small group with the individual GAC, but it's not confirmed yet, and I will keep the group update. So that's one thing to update now.
Okay. Thank you very much indeed. I realised that there was that there have been a couple of efforts going on, but we are really grateful for that and for all of the work that you have been doing with your colleagues. It's much appreciated. Rudy, now would you like to make a point?
Yes, thank you, Chris. Rudy speaking. I had a chat a few days ago with Kathy Kleiman in another working group session, and she pointed out that a lot of registrars are looking into the discussions about the RDS. They're figuring out what the new model would be, and eventually, if in the model there is a definition and there is space foreseen to allow having an ASCII script field and a non-ASCII script field for contact information, then translation could be done. But that has a lot of impact on the services that the registrars have to develop for their customers. And I felt a lot of pushback from the registrar's world that they see it as a non-beneficiary service that they would have to deliver anyway, or they would be excluded for some market. So it is an issue. I think we need to have a deeper discussion with the registrar's world in order to better understand their pushback at the first level, but also at the same time try to convince them that there is an advantage having this service also.
Yes. Yeah, those are very, very important points. Thank you very much. So we really need to target them as an audience. Okay. Now, coming back to the Thai document, let us just continue with other, just see what other issues they have raised. So there is something about the WHOIS accuracy program specifications. Manual verification could be costly for registrars when it is cross-border. So, yes, that's really very much building up what you're just saying. I mean, that's obviously one of the concerns. I suppose it could be a Thai registrar which is possibly having to register, Chinese addresses conceivably. You rather wonder what sort of cases that could be. So we've got to the bottom of page 3 now, and then if we go over to page 4, we're now talking about what should any new policy relating to translation and transliteration, when should it come into effect? And then there is talk about phishing in Thailand, PH, no, that's just phishing. And effectively, this is answering the issue that Rudy just brought up. So this is a reason for doing this, that providing this information could come under phishing mitigation, that's actually an argument for doing it soon. If we just scroll down a few more paragraphs. There are suggestions at the end of the letter, really just one sentence, but it says, the cost of conversion from local language into common language should belong to registrants, and the cost for validation should belong to registrars. That definitely needs to be recorded about cost. Now, that is just my version. Yeah, that is just my sort of criticism, my summary of that letter. It's very, very interesting. Before we move further on, I'd just like to give other people a chance to add any other input about that letter. There's a bit of typing going on in the Adobe chat, so I'll just wait for that. Rudy, would you like to say something about that?
Yes, thank you, Chris. Rudy speaking. This is a good sample. The Thai letter is really a really good sample that there are specific needs for translation and transliteration. And I think this could be used as a kind of sample to, and I'm just wondering if we would be allowed to go public with the responses of Thailand to trigger others to step up and come forward with their feelings and their perceptions and their comments. Sometimes this could be a good appetizer for others.
That is. Thank you very much. This is Chris speaking. That is a very interesting suggestion. Now, basically, as these things are coming in, I make them. I am making them public. So they are. I think this correspondence is all in the wiki somewhere. So it's really just a matter of putting links to it. Now, what we could do is when I send out the letters to chase up responses, I could add a line just saying, this is what other people have said, because, certainly it's a lot easier to look at what other people have done and see what sort of issues there could be for other languages, because they may well affect your language. So that is what I would like to suggest. But I don't know how people... thank you, Rudy. Rudy's saying he agrees with that. So when the letters go out, I will add a line to the wiki correspondence so that people can see what's already happened, and that should make things easier. Thank you very much, Pityanan. And now just looking again at the chat, Peter Green is expressing interest in the infrastructure concept and asking the very good question, okay, you know, who is actually, you know, who is building this these databases? Rudy, I wonder if you're answering that question.
Thank you, Chris. Rudy speaking. I think it's important that we catch up with the expert working group that works on also the RDS and the data model. It would be good if we could trigger them in order to see if they plan in the model space for having two languages for one field. If that's a fact, then indeed we have to look into the infrastructure concept of the work to be done. But I would like to know, and maybe we have to address that working group with a specific message, asking them if they are thinking about having such a solution in the RDS. Otherwise, it will make it difficult to get our recommendation being implemented by another group.
Thank you very much for that. You know, just absolutely the case. Does anybody on the call happen to know whether that is the way the database is being? I have to admit I have presumed that there are two fields the whole time, you know, one ASCII, one non-ASCII, and in fact the issue doesn't stop there because, you know, there's going to be the problem about whether the ASCII is transliteration or translation. But that is a very, very important question that we need to be sure about. Specifically, one of the issues is that, you know, presuming there are two fields, let us imagine the organization field. So you would have, I'm going to use a Chinese organization as an example. So we've got the Chinese organization, and it's written its organizational name in Chinese in the non-ASCII field in characters. And then because it's a well-known organization, it's the University of Peking, for example, it's a well-known organization. So it's then in the other field, in the ASCII field, it's put University of Peking in the other field. But the you know, the question is that if you had a rarer organization which actually didn't have an English form, so now I'm just really struggling, something ending in Gongsu company, whether we're happy to have transliteration or translation all in that ASCII field. I mean, these are the sorts of questions that that come up. Okay. Well, the main thing is that we, that we have highlighted this issue, and you know, we will need to be in contact about both sides. You know, how many fields there are for what, and you know, whether we can actually have two rather different sorts of data sitting in one field. Okay. And moving on, unless anybody's got anything else to say about that, we can now move into refinements to proposed questions. And there was quite a lot of work done on questions 5 to 7 last week, which I have tried to summarize in the wiki. It may not be a very good summary of what the various people said. It's always rather difficult to summarize other people's pieces in meetings. Have a look at the summaries. I'm just at the moment just giving you a URL so that you can have a look at the questions. If you have a look at the questions and you know you think that your bit's too short, then just email me, or if you've got direct access to the wiki, just fix it. It's one of the really good things about wikis. So anyway, lots of stuff on questions 5, 6, and 7. I then added, we were going to have a new question about validation, and I think eventually I just called it, I think it was verification and validation. And so I started that off by using the other Thai document, because there is the... now, let me see if I can find that. Slightly struggling to get that question. Oh, yeah, okay, so we've actually got some sort of technical problem, because I did actually create a page, but for some reason it seems to have vanished from the wiki, so I don't know whether... Oh, wait a moment. Yes, that Julie has just pasted the... okay, so that is the correct URL, which Julie has just pasted. And it's called Validation of Address Information. And this is the other Thai document, which is the presentation. So I think it would be very good to have a look at this, because it just, there's just so much in it. And so I'm hoping everybody's able to see it. I'm intending to start on page 2, and that's a slide called Current Who Is Contact Information. And there we have the problem that I was just telling you about before, that for some reason one of the parts of the address is missed off. It's actually the district. But you see, that can be a problem because different countries call districts and subdivisions different things. So, in Japan you have words like cho and chome, and these all refer to various sorts of districts. And so there can be problems because it may not be clear, where people put the information. And if it isn't clear, you get a problem like the one here that I already mentioned a little bit earlier. Then if we go on to page 3, and that's called Current Who Is Contact Information, we have the, it looks like Google Maps. Ah, yes, now we can, now it's, things are a bit easier and we're not having to use two tabs in our browsers. So here we have the transliteration, Tanon Wittayu, and this is, we had sort of tentative ideas about how addresses would work, and our tentative idea was that transliteration would be used. So basically we are talking Tanon Wittayu, like this, the first possibility, and that's what's on the street sign. But on what looks like Google Maps, you've got Wireless Road. And of course, the question I really want to ask the Thai members of our group is, how common is this? So is it that normally, you find a Tanon Wittayu, and it's quite rare to find that these things actually translated, or is it something that just happens the whole time? So Piti Nan, I'm hoping you're going to be able to help us.
Hi, it's Piti Nan here. Okay, for this slide, the number 2 is actually happen not every cases, but mm-hmm. for this case, actually the wireless road is the road that is the location of U.S. Embassy and British Embassy, mm-hmm. and also quite a number of the financial institutes, so it's coming to the spotlight. The WTU means radio, and the radio is the wireless. So somehow the first one who put the English name on it is called it Wireless Road. So this case, we actually go with the wireless. Mm-hmm. And so maybe I will just go over to the next slide as well. Mm-hmm. So the next slide is the sum. Sorry, I can't hear myself. Okay. I'll just go. On the other suit, right? This one is a local business on this road. If you can see, when you search for the Google, the result of the search is coming with a non-view. But from the map on the right, actually, Google couldn't figure whether they should use the translation or translation. So after the number 83, you will see the Thai word of Tanonoliu. And then the rest is called on with English. And if you look at the who is history as well, it's actually you feel wild at most because it's... depends on the data owner to key in. And for this road, the common name in English is the wireless road.
Thank you very much for that. This is a very difficult case, just quite wonderful. This is something we really need to think of because we have a road in Thailand with two common names. What on earth do we do? I almost expect wireless road, but we may want to have a rule which is saying use transliteration, which is tan with you. But anyway, I won't go too much into the ins and outs of this because there is more of this stuff just a bit later, which I think will help. Rudy, would you like to say something?
Thank you, Chris. Rudy speaking. Yes, I have, in fact, a question for Pitanan, and maybe, she's no longer online. But I'm just wondering, with the sample you were giving, being the translation being wireless road, is wireless road being recognized as a legal address in Thailand or not? Because that impacts a lot on the validation and the value of a translation. If that is giving a non-legal address, it makes it really difficult for law enforcement to act in a correct way. So if you can eventually give some information about that.
Thank you, Rudy. I couldn't agree more. This is certainly one aspect of it, but I think the fear is that however much you say to people, you know, use the standard, use the legal form, this sort of case is very, very difficult. It is a truly wonderful example. Now, let us continue because there are more good things in this presentation. So let us see the next slide. Now, we've got the romanization problem. Now, this is a problem that we've already spoken about, that it is possible to transliterate the same word in several ways. So we've got H-U-A-Y, we've got H-U-Y, and brilliant, we've got H-U-A-Y hyphen. And these are basically classic transliteration problems. The good news is that following a standard would be really helpful here. I suspect there is probably a standard which will say you have to do this, and we're not just talking about how the words are written, you know, whether it's H-U-Y with the A or not, we're also talking about the use of hyphens. So I think the romanization thing is not so much, I think that's fixable. A completely new issue that we haven't seen before is just really simple, but it is whether it's road, R-O-A-D, or just R-D. You know, that that sort of thing, you know, is also another set of issues. And yes, because I mean, the whole—you've also got the issue we already know about, where you know, using road and street and things like that in, you know, Thai and other addresses. So, yes, okay. And before we leave this, before we leave this slide, I think there were also problems with no building name and no street name, but maybe we can ignore those. That looks just like data input problem, possibly. So move on to the next one. This slide, slide six. Sorry, I've got lost. So this is just the breakdown between the CCTLDs and GTLDs. So, you know, perhaps what this is telling us is that, you know, we really need to be looking at both groups, and we do really need to reach out to the CCNSO. I think that's something that's on my consciousness at the moment. Then the following slide, number seven. We already know about this. This is just our stuff, so we can keep on going through it. And then we have a very interesting slide, which is the compliance slide. And here we've got some suggestions. We've got suggestions for geographical names, geographical nouns, and contact information format. So what is very interesting here is that you know, you've got the list of the local rules and regulations, and you've also got international standards, the United Nations Group of Experts on Geographical Names, for geographical names, and also the UPU, the Universal Postal Union, for both geographical nouns and contact information format. This is very, very interesting, because really until now we have just been saying, well, transliterate it, and that's the end of the story. And perhaps transliterate it is part of what these standards are saying. Basic question: is anybody on the call familiar with these international standards? I am slightly familiar with the United Nations Group of Experts on Geographical Names, because I did some geographical work some time ago, and they were involved with it. But I'm just wondering: does anybody have familiarity with those standards? And here I am hoping to see hands going up, but right, okay. Well, what that means is that I will have a bit of a look at what the ramifications of the UPU and the United Nations Group standards could be. And I mean, it's the whole issue of, okay, there are these standards, but are they actually going to help us? You know, by saying, right, you must use this standard when you do this, is that going to make it easier for people, you know, providing transliteration or translation, or is it actually making it more difficult? And perhaps the approach that we've taken so far, which is basically You know, if it's an organizational name, then you translate it if there's a translation, but otherwise transliterate it. If it's a geographical address, you transliterate it. That's very simple. Is that a better approach than this? Whether anybody's got any feelings about that. There is now, Wana Witt is talking about the United Nations Geographical Database, which is an extremely useful tool, which, you know, just has huge numbers of place names in it. Rudy is making a very similar point. You know, what if the standard deviates too much from the real translated word? Or, frankly, what if the standard deviates too much from what people actually use in practice? This is an extremely interesting area. Okay, anything about that slide before we move into what is, if anything, an even more interesting slide? Okay, this is a really solid proposal. This is what should be done. There is this possibility of formalizing data using this sort of a scheme. You've got information about the registrant on a card, which then goes, there's an application to the registrar. And you've actually got a role for the GAC in checking information before that registration information goes into the RDS. I don't know whether anybody would like to say some more about, because I am probably not the best person to talk about this suggestion. Whether Pitinan, you would like? Oh no, is Pitinan still on? If Pitinan would like to say something about this this slide.
Okay, is Pitinan here? I think the main idea of this slide is we actually see that it will be best if we try to make the input be as much data as possible. Mm-hmm. So just fix it at the very beginning of the data. So it might be different from country to country, which standard you want to follow and which mechanism mm-hmm. you want to use. Yeah. But for Thai, because the UNGGN input is from the local authorized, mm-hmm. so if we follow this, for Thai case, we probably it's not deviate too much from the real translated word. That's for Rudy's questions also. So the main idea is to make it correct since the beginning, and that's the thing. Also, it's not really the tools, it's like the mechanism. So if you want to set the standard for the country, it actually takes some time, right? So yeah. we are kind of working out with the post, and also the ETDA, my agency. So we try to make it, get the stakeholder involved and set the standard for the input to be correct since the beginning. So that's the core idea. After it's get in correctly, then the validation would be like much easier, hopefully.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yep. Well, thank you very much for your explanation, and in fact, thank you for the entire thing. I mean, we are really grateful for your work, and I think this is going to be helpful to many, many people. Now, Rudy, we're running out of time. Would you like to say something?
Yes, thank you, Chris. With relation to the actual slides and the explanation Pitanan has been giving, which is really great. There's something popping up in my mind that we maybe have to trigger into our further discussions is about, as we see here, the action of the registration and having the translation or transliteration done at the moment of the registration, we perhaps have to think about a later action allowing translation or transliteration after the registration has been done, in order not to block a registration and have a complexity of first in, first out, or last in, first out, and so on. So I think it's something we have to put on our list to discover if we allow, if we would allow, having the translation being done in a later stage than the registration.
Thank you very much, Rudy. Yeah, extremely, extremely important. You know, if there is a possibility of deferring the translation or transliteration, that could mean in some cases that the translation and transliteration will never be provided. So if we end up in a situation where we do allow it to occur later, that could cause some problems. It's certainly something that we need to consider very carefully indeed. But thank you for that. Okay. I wonder that there is just so much that could be said about that presentation, but if there's nothing immediate, Rudy is actually just pointing out that going the other way is also dangerous, as one may go before the other at the registration phase. Yes, okay. So that is certainly something we need to flag up in the wiki and elsewhere. Okay, now there is, we've actually slightly over the hour, but we'll just continue a few more minutes perhaps. Working methodology, this is a very general thing. I mean, we have been working so far just using these questions and using the wiki a lot. I should have made it clear earlier on that I'm actually really open to just, you know, to all sorts of methodologies, you know, really anything that gets us closer to where we want to be. So this is, if anybody would either like to say something briefly now about maybe improving the way we work, or whether, I'll just raise the issue, and if somebody would like to say something now, then by all means, but then otherwise, please just contribute to the mailing list at some point during the week. But that's why that working methodology point is there. It really is only one possible way of working, and at the moment what seems to be happening is that we seem to be sort of adding sub-questions every now and then, but, you know, if somebody looks at the questions and says, well, you know, this is totally irrelevant, we shouldn't be doing it, then, you know, we may want to get rid of stuff, or you know, we may, you know, I think today we've possibly discovered a couple of new issues and therefore possibly a couple of new questions. But anyway, what I would really like to say is that, you know, I'm really open to changing methodology, and that's an ongoing thing. So I say it now, but I'll try and remember to say something similar at regular intervals. Rudy is saying perhaps we need to prioritize the questions and sub-questions. Yes, I think that we that certainly I realized that if we'd covered the questions about cost earlier on, we might have wanted to add something to the surveys about cost. So I think that's a very good point, but that said, we're fairly near the end of the questions now. But yes, I mean, we might want to change the order of them. And Rudy is saying, you know, whether we want perhaps a table format with indications of priority. That sounds very useful to me. And who addresses it? Yes. Talking about the survey just briefly, I don't know what the status of that is. Whether they, I believe that they are still interested in input, and I think the only major input to the survey that was is being done by the study group. I should have made that clear. Yeah. So Julie is saying it's gone out, but they are interested in comments. And I made a comment last time that I thought it was very important that transliteration and translation could apply differently to different fields in the database, but they'd made that point in their first survey and perhaps not in the second one. Now, the other perhaps more important issue is the whole thing about cost. That may well be too late for that survey now, because I think it's too big an area. That may even be a follow-up survey conceivably, because I think this area of costs is very, very important. And apparently there'll be I'm just reading what's going on in the chat room. Apparently there'll be a presentation in Singapore during the working group meeting. Okay, that sounds very useful. All right. Any other business? Well, thank you very much for today's call, and we're scheduling calls at the same time this week and the week after, so we can continue the various discussions we've had then and also on the mailing list. So I'd really like to thank you for today. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chris, for your chairing this meeting or helping us through difficult phases. Thank you.
It's really interesting. Okay, thank you, Rudy. Goodbye, then.
Bye-bye.
Anna, we can stop the recording.
Lovely. So thank you very much for participating in today's call. You may now disconnect. Thank you.